Now, InfoTrack continues. Once again, here's Chris Whitting.
Want to experience being loved? An expert says there's a science to it. Here with the story, InfoTrack reporter Jim Anthony. Jim?
Thanks, Chris. My guest is Dr. Sonia Lubomirsky. She is a distinguished professor of psychology at the University of California, Riverside, and the world's preeminent expert on happiness. A true expert in the science of happiness, she's written two best-selling books, The How of Happiness and The Myths of Happiness, and is co-author of a new book, which will be out soon, called How to Feel Loved, The Five Mindsets That Get You More of What Matters Most. I'm sure you're asked this all the time, but as an expert, how do you define happiness? I mean, what does it mean to be happy?
I define happiness actually the way the researchers define happiness, which is that happiness really has two components. And the first component is the experience of fairly frequent positive emotions, right? So happy people often experience joy, serenity, curiosity, affection, pride, enthusiasm, you know, all kinds of positive emotions, not all the time, but frequently. And that's one component of happiness. And the second component of happiness is having a sense that your life is good, that you're progressing towards your life goals at a good pace, that you're satisfied with your life. So basically, these two components of happiness, you can think of them as being happy in your life, positive emotions, and being happy with your life, life satisfaction.
Why does it appear easier or feel easier as human beings to be negative instead of positive? I'm sure we all know someone who fits that description. You know, that person isn't happy unless they're miserable.
Right. Two answers. One is actually, on average, most people are a little bit higher above the neutral point on happiness. So actually, most people are a little happier than average, interestingly. But then the other answer is you can argue sort of from evolutionary theory that it's evolutionarily adaptive for humans to be on the alert for negative things. So bad tends to be stronger than good. So the idea is that, like, it's more important that we notice a threat in the environment or a predator or a loss than it is for us to notice something good. So that is the case. The kind of negativity is a little bit easier to us because maybe it's adaptive for us.
So it's kind of the one bad apple spoils the whole bunch philosophy.
Right. If you anyone's been a teacher and you get like one negative evaluation and 99 positive ones, you'll remember the one negative one.
Psychology encompasses certainly a broad spectrum of interests and research. How did you come to study or be drawn to positive psychology? Or you've referred to yourself as a happiness scientist. How were you drawn to that?
Right. Well, I started doing it before there was a field of positive psychology. 36 years ago, I mean, it was really kind of serendipitous. Well, I started graduate school and my PhD was at Stanford University. And my advisor, whose name is Lee Ross, was the world's preeminent scholar on conflict and negotiation. So nothing to do with happiness, maybe the opposite of happiness. And the first day that we spent together, we took a walk around campus and one of us asked, and it was probably him, what is the secret to happiness? And why are some people happier than others? And at that time, there was only one person who was doing some research on happiness, like looking at surveys, correlating happiness with money or with age and things like that. But really, there was no other happiness research. So that's how it started, really serendipitously.
Through your research, what are some ways or things we can do to be happy or happier? You identify them as happiness interventions, quote unquote.
Right. And I believe my lab was kind of pioneered happiness interventions, where we basically started doing experiments. And these are kind of like clinical trials. Actually, they are clinical trials. But instead of testing, say, a new vaccine or a new, you know, medication, we're testing happiness practices. And we're randomly assigning some people to, say, to practice gratitude and other people to do something neutral. And so we found over the years, we mostly focused on gratitude interventions, kindness interventions, where we ask people to do acts of kindness that makes people happier. And then we started doing research where we just started asking people to act more social or act more extroverted or have a conversation with someone. Because it hit me in my lab a few years ago that almost all of the interventions that make us happier, the reason they work, the reason that they're effective, is that they make us feel more connected to or more loved by others. So when I write a gratitude letter to my mom, it makes me feel more loved by her. When I do an act of kindness for a colleague, it makes me feel closer to that colleague. So most happiness practices actually involve feelings of being connected or loved. So that's kind of my latest research is really about how to get people to feel more connected and more loved.
We're going to dovetail into that right now because, you know, preparing for this interview, it made me think of the lyrics to an old popular Nat King Cole song called Nature Boy. There's a line in that song that reads, "The greatest thing you'll ever learn is just to love and be loved in return." Now, is it really that simple? Something tells me that it's perhaps a little more complex than that.
Yeah, in some ways it really is that simple, that love is the most important thing to happiness. You know, there's a study, the famous Harvard study of development, which followed people for like 85 years. And the main conclusion was basically happiness equals love, full stop. So happiness is love, but something that my co-author Harry Reese and I want to sort of add to that, we don't fully agree because I think it's not just being loved or expressing love. The most important thing is feeling loved, because you can be surrounded by people who love you, right? Your wife, your friends, you know, colleague, a family member. But if you don't feel loved, it's as though they're not there, right? As though it doesn't matter. So our book is called How to Feel Loved because we realized that the feeling loved that really matters. That's really the key to happiness. Happy people feel loved.
What's the disconnect there? And why does it matter so much for our well-being?
Well, it's so interesting. One way to think about it is like, imagine you have a cup of love and someone, maybe your mom, your partner, your child, your friend, they kind of express love. They show the love to you. They really truly love you. They try to fill up your cup of love. But some of us, like maybe there's a leak in the bottom of the cup and the love kind of leaks out, or maybe there's a very small opening at the top. So it never quite gets in. And if you don't feel love, then it's not going to translate to happiness, right? It's not going to translate to sort of feeling secure. But there's things you can do to try to feel more love, the love that already exists.
The subtitle of the book, it introduces 5 mindsets for feeling loved. And to your point, if a listener could try just one small shift today to feel more loved, which mindset would you start with and why?
I think I would start with, it's a little bit counterintuitive, but if you want to feel more loved, you need to first make the other person feel more loved. Let's say you have an adult child and you don't feel as loved by them as you'd like to. And people are like, well, maybe I can like make myself more lovable, or I can get them to love me more. But no, really, the first step is to get them to feel more loved. And I would say the first step is to show genuine curiosity in them, which seems kind of like maybe obvious. But really, it's genuine curiosity. Ask them questions. Actually show that you're really interested in their inner life and the details of their life and what they're all about. And so that's really the first step, if I were to choose one step.
And this love is not just about romantic partners. This is about friends, family, and as you point out, everyday connections, right? It's really that connection.
Absolutely. We define love very broadly. You can even love a stranger. I mean, I think maybe we've had experiences where we have a short chat with a stranger and somehow you just feel really understood in that moment. You just really feel like you're part of like this giant whole, you know, like part of the universe, and you just feel love in that moment. So yeah, we define love very broadly. I think love should be used more often. You know, like we don't usually talk about love in the workplace, and I love my colleagues, you know, some of my colleagues. We don't say that enough to each other. We don't say we love you enough to our friends. I mean, I say I love you to my friends all the time, and I'll be on the phone. I'll be like, I love you so much. And my kids will be like, Mom, who are you talking to? I'm like, oh, that was a friend, you know? So I hope that we bring the word love, especially feeling loved, back more.
My guest is Dr. Sonia Lubomirsky. Her book is How to Feel Love, the 5 Mindsets That Get You More of What Matters Most. You can go to howtofeellove.com to learn more. Thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much. It was fun to talk to you.
And I'm Jim Anthony for InfoTrack.
You're listening to InfoTrack, a production of Syndication Networks.